Okie doke. So last week, I can't say we left on a cliffhanger because that wouldn't be the appropriate analogy, but we left off right before something really cool. So we wrapped up on the bottom of page 62. And, you know, David, I may just read that paragraph again because we're going to be getting into the third step promises here. And so I think that paragraph kind of sets it up nicely. Anything you want to say? Recap anything for now? Just get right in. Okay, let's do this. All right, guys. So we're going to pick up bottom of 62, bottom paragraph. I'm going to read that, but we're not going to, unless David, you want to re-comment on anything in there, we'll see how you feel. All right. And if not, we'll just power through. Okay, here we go. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He's the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom.
Yeah, I think it does us justice. I have to make some comments here simply because setting up that whole paragraph is what we find out about ourselves is how that we're extremely selfish and self-centered. They were driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. All these things are blocking us from power. They arise out of ourselves. We find out there are troubles of our own making. So if I just stop making my own troubles, I won't have these problems. I just don't have the ability to remove this selfishness. And it says, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness, or what? We must, or it kills us. So in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we'll find death threats, and that's one of them right there. But that gives us, like Bill always does, he tells us a huge issue or problem of death, grave danger, and then he gives us the solution. God makes that possible. So as David read there, we find out that we can reduce our self-centeredness by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. And then it says, this is the how and the why of it. So the how of it is that, first of all, which means immediately we make this decision. We must make this decision to quit playing God. And in my experience about that whole thing is it was easier for me to concede to my innermost self that I was a real alcoholic and a drug addict than it is for me to quit playing God. It just is because I didn't realize I was doing it all the time. And then it says, why do we find out that we have to quit playing God? Because it doesn't work. That's why. So God plays God, David plays David. That is the nuts of it. And then in the order of things, because it says next, in these orders, we decided that hereafter this drama of life, God was going to be our director. Directors, one who is in charge of an activity. He is our principal. First in order of importance. We are his agents. A person who acts on behalf of another. We are get to be agents of God. And then it says, most good ideas are simple. And then this relationship with power, that's the concept that we're talking about here, was the keystone. So the keystone is at the top of this triumphant arch that we're building here that we're going to pass through freedom. And this is relating to step 3.
Okay, fantastic. So now we're going to get into the top of page 63 with some wonderful promises. So if you are new or new to studying the book, but maybe you've been banging around for a little bit, you've probably been in meetings where the promises, quote unquote, are read. What are typically referred to as the promises are actually the ninth step promises that are later in the book, page 83, right? Something like that. Mm-hmm. But the entire book, at least the first 164 pages, are riddled with all sorts of wonderful promises. Sometimes they're one-off and sometimes there's a whole series of them. So here, there are actually 12 promises. I have them incorrectly numbered in this copy of the book, but I think I got it. So here's what we'll do. I will read them and I will enumerate the promises if you want to jot them as we go along. And then maybe David will go back and sort of tackle a promise at a time, something like that.
Okay.
If that works for you. Okay. Absolutely. So top of 63. when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. That's a promise. So I guess number one, we had a new employer. Promise two, being all powerful. That's promise number three. Some of these are, there's multiple ones in a sentence. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. That's promise number four. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. That's number five. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. That's number six. All right, and here we get a whole run of them. As we felt new power flow in, that's promise seven. As we enjoyed peace of mind, that's promise eight. As we discovered we could face life successfully, number nine. As we became conscious of his presence, number 10, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and or the hereafter. That's promise 11. And number 12, we were reborn. Ash, do you have any words in this paragraph? No? Okay. David, I don't want to stifle you if you're going to get rolling here by suggesting we do one at a time. So I'm happy to just let you start like normal and we just go as we go.
Well, I was going to personalize it too. So
go ahead, bro.
Like, a lot of times, you know, like David and I had found out that when we read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think they're talking about Esteban and Carol. They're not really talking about me because I don't have these issues, right? That's not my deal. Truth is if I personalize things, and we get this from Mark Houston, we turn this around and we make this so it's identifiable for me. So it says, top of the page, when David, so I'm going to just take these words like we and he, and I'm going to change them around. I'm going to personalize and put them in third person. When David sincerely took such a position, what position are we taking here? We're made a decision to have relationship with power. So this paragraph here is all about, we became conscious of his presence now because we made a decision here. We're making the decision three. Now I'm conscious of his presence in my life. Then it says, the position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. David had a new employer. I am now his employee. And back to the position, what position am I taking? The decision that he's our father, he's my principal, he is my director. That's the position I'm taking. So God is in charge of these activities of mine. I have now fired myself from my management position. I'm no longer sitting on the board of David G's Inc. Fired. Done. So this is the position I'm taking. He's my father, my principal, and my director. And all sorts of remarkable things follow that David pointed out as a great promise. We had a new employer, capital letter there, meaning God. Being all-powerful, God provided what we needed. Here's the condition. If we kept close to God and performed his work well, what is the work well talking about? We're talking about the 12th step, practicing these principles in all our affairs. And when we get there, we'll talk a little bit more about it. There's a chapter in the back of the book, Working with Others, that gives us directions on how to work with others, but it doesn't really identify with how do we practice these principles on all our affairs. We'll find out the three chapters after that really give us better directions on how to do that. But you'll have to wait for that because it's going to be many moons from now. So now we're established on such a footing. So David became less and less interested in himself, David's little plans and designs. More and more, David became interested in seeing what he could contribute to life. So now I'm not taking, I'm trying to give. I'm not so much a taker as I was before. David felt new power flowing. So this is a new experience that I'm having. And as David enjoyed peace of mind, David discovered David could face life successfully. David became conscious of his presence, step 11. David began to lose his fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. David was reborn. So all the things that David talks about a lot of times being one of his favorite pages on page 27, all these things internally about me are starting to change. Because what we found out as we study up to this point, this is not an external illness that I have. I have an internal condition that needs an internal solution. And that's the directions of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to have.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, I guess I can just underscore a few things that I like in here, because I think David did a really nice job of breaking these down. You know, the key here is for the takeaway from the last paragraph. We're making this shift here because we're coming to terms with, I got to quit playing God. And I'm reminded, right? There's a lot of pages getting to this point where it's being illustrated that me playing God really wasn't working out so well for me. So it's very black and white here, you know. And there's, it says, this is the how and the why of it. And there's not really a lot of why questions that are posed and then answered in the Big Book, which is good, because I don't like why questions when it comes to recovery. Why questions, I'll go search them out and they'll get me away from the important points, which is this, which is the is. I am an alcoholic. I am an addict. Why am I this way? Not as important as understanding that I am and what I need to do to get healthy again. So I love how when Bill actually addresses the why here, he just says, well, the why do I have to quit playing God? Well, because it doesn't work, right? That's it. Three words. And then so it goes on into these promises to say, when I take this position to quit playing God and let God be in charge, as I should have always done, all sorts of remarkable things followed. And, you know, today, I think, at least I'll speak for the U.S., we have taken all of these words that used to have much greater weight and significance and turned them into everyday words like amazing and awesome and fantastic and remarkable. When Bill was using a word like remarkable, he was using it so that it had some weight and some gravitas to it, right? He's not saying, when I take this position to quit playing God, some stuff's going to happen that's going to be good for me. He was saying remarkable, life-changing, right? Life-saving. These things are going to matter. And yeah, we have this new employer, but it's not just any old new employer. It's one that is all-powerful. It's going to give me what I need, not necessarily what I want. What do I need? And David talked about these conditions. If I keep close to God and performed his work well, for whatever reason, this has just been coming up a lot when I've had opportunities to share or share back. It is me staying close to God. It is my relationship with God that gets me and keeps me spiritually fit. God doesn't just do this because he feels like saving my butt. I have to grow and constantly renew my relationship with God. That is how I exercise and maintain that fitness of the spirit. Mm-hmm. Established on such a footing, this is probably my favorite promise of these 12, because I love how condescending and patronizing Bill is in this. It's so perfect for me. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. Do you guys know how many little plans and designs I had that I was constantly cooking up that, by the way, I never acted on? That was just the garbage that was floating around in my head. Right? But more and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Man, all I knew, my entire experience was to take. I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get mine. Right? And I do get mine when I come into recovery, but then I must instantly give away all that I got. Right? I got to turn this around. I got to serve my new director, and I got to serve my fellow man. I got to figure out what I can bring to the party, not take from it. And then this great little summary of what my experience of having a higher power, this growing faith is going to have. It's going to include new power flowing in, peace of mind, facing life successfully, and an increasing consciousness of his presence. And late David mentioned later in like 11, we talk about this relationship with God gets to the extent that it becomes a working part of my mind. And so I become intuitive about how to go through my day, to go through my life, to go through my existence. And then ultimately, I'm reborn. And of course, I'm reborn. David brought this up too. I'll just echo this and we'll move on. I love page 27 because it illustrates exactly what it's going to look like when I'm reborn. That my thoughts, my feelings, and my beliefs, my attitudes are all going to get cast out. And thank God, literally thank God that they do get cast out and cast aside, because those are the things that were killing me. And they get replaced by new ones. And when I'm thinking differently, feeling differently, and believing and reacting differently, I am reborn because I'm an entirely different person. Entirely different, which is, in fact, remarkable.
So before you read the third step prayer, if you don't mind, this is a little something that I go through with my proteges before we do the third step prayer. Mm-hmm. And these are just a couple sentences from the last few pages. Just to kind of get me in line with this decision here that I'm making in step three here is. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to ask myself that I must be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. We can find that back on page 60 in the fourth paragraph. And that happened to be the first requirement, which is also a must. I know Howard's on here today. And according to Howard and the studies that I get to do with him, we're up to about 139 must, have-tos, or had-tos, or something to that fashion in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if anyone thinks there's no must, check and see that there are. You're
reading the wrong book.
Right. So the first requirement is that we convince that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. The second one that I do, these are my notes. I don't have these memorized. I had to quit playing God. We just read that. David read it when we started out here. Page 62. Third paragraph. And that the third one is the God will be my director now. Same paragraph. I'm just really trying to remind myself of what I am doing here. I'm turning my will and my life, my thinking and my actions, according to Joe and Charlie, over to God. And then the top of page 63 that David just read here to us, that I will allow God to be my new employer. So those are the four things that I do before I take someone on my knees to the third step prayer.
Continuing on 63, second paragraph. We were now at step three. Many of us said to our maker, as we understood him, italicized, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Exclamation mark. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Ashton, anything? Okay.
So this is a prayer. There's many prayers in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've heard this said by many guys that I respect very much. Go ahead and rewrite your third step prayer any way you want to write it. Doesn't really matter, because this for me is the selfless prayer. This is a prayer that I memorized right away in sobriety. I got sober around the holidays, a few 24 hours ago, right around Thanksgiving. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm like 2 or 3 weeks sober. I had a meeting planned. I was out of town at my in-laws' house. Had a giant table of in-laws and glasses of wine everywhere and one glass of water. Anyone want to guess what my plate was? Talk about feeling like the round peg in a square, or a square peg in a round hole. But thankfully, I had that prayer. Thankfully, I had that phone. Thankfully, I had started to have a concept of a power in my life, and I had a meeting set up. So I had a toolkit that I had picked up and did something with. And I had a really good Thanksgiving. I believe everyone else did around me too. And I've had a bunch of them since then. But I say this prayer because it's selfless. I need to be removed from the equation because I have an ability to play God in other people's lives. I just do. It just shows up. I want to do God's will, not David's will. And this prayer allows me to do that. It says, like, God, I offer myself to you, God, to do with me as you will. So do it with me as you will, God, whatever that is. I am open to whatever that is. Sometimes it's to be quiet. Sometimes it's to be helpful. Certainly always to be useful. Then relieve me of the slavery of bondage of self. I didn't even know I was in bondage of self until I read what we came up with here in the last couple pages. I had no idea I was in the bondage of self. Well, we found out that I was being driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. And when I step on the toes of my fellows, they retaliate, and sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But invariably, of some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later places us in a position to be hurt. This prayer reemphasizes for me how selfish and self-centered that I really am, that I need to have God remove this selfishness because I don't have the ability to do that. And then it says, take away my difficulties. All these shortcomings are different that he needs to be taken from me at this time. Why? That I may have victory over them, that bear witness to those that would help with thy power, his love, and his way of life. I say this prayer before I come on Zoom. I say this prayer before I go on a Zoom, like when I go to Howard's, I say it because I want to have an open mind. We do the set-aside prayer. That's an open mind prayer. It's a wonderful thing. It comes mainly out of the second step. But this, too, is also reminding myself that I want to keep on learning what God's will is for me all the time. I want to have that selflessness. And when he removes my difficulties, when I'm going to a treatment center with David, I want to be able to explain to them, the bedevilments are not alive and well in my life anymore. The bedevilments that also show up in my trouble of my own making. The main cause of my bedevilments are the selfishness and self-centeredness here. And then it says, in all capital letters, I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. All God, 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 may I do thy God always. And David and I always, you know, the exclamation point's there for a reason. Because this is not on an occasion. This is always. This is what I want to experience always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could last abandon ourselves utterly to him. So utterly just means completely to him. So the question now at the end of the prayer is yes or no. As they say the prayer, am I willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? That's the question. I need to know that. The answer here is. And I think I'll just leave it at that. I might come back a little bit. Sure.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, I'll share a little bit about this. So, you know, David talked about there's three parts to this, and there's a little condition or explanation to each part, right? So the first chunk, God, I offer myself to thee. Why? Well, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Right, so I'm not just offering myself to God in sort of grand gesture of humility on my part. And then in the middle portion, it's relieve me of the bondage of self. Why? That I may better do thy will. Oh, okay, so there's some purpose for why I'm going to be relieved of something. It is to serve a greater good. And then take away my difficulties in the third part. Why? So that victory over them may bear witness to those that would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. The intent here, again, culminating the last many pages, is I am drowning in self. So I need to get into this selfless existence, which I'm initiating with this selfless prayer. This is not easy for me. This is not common to me. Here's the prayer that I want to make. God, relieve me of the bondage of self. Take away my difficulties. That's the prayer I want to make. Why? Because it's just all about so I can get mine. I am fantastic at uttering prayers like that. That's very natural to me. But that prayer is not going to help me. You know, those are lying along the lines of a foxhole prayer. God, please get me out of this situation. Please, God, get me out of the handcuffs. God, please help me find some money that I just spent on a bag of dope. Right? Those are all self-based. This is to put aside all my little plans and designs, the entire future that I've written, not only for myself, but all of you people too. All of that goes aside. No, God, I am offering myself to you. Offering myself. I mean, Dashton, I know it seems like almost such a remedial word, but maybe look up offer and the way it's being used here, kind of like an offering, right? I'm offering myself to God. I'm not just putting myself in his service. I am offering myself to God to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. That means I don't get a say in how God is going to build me and how he's going to put me into action. God's not terribly interested, in my opinion, because as David went to great pains to illustrate, I already ran my business into the ground. Right? In Bill's story, we talk about, you know, on was that Black Tuesday when the Great Depression got kicked off and the tickers was minus 32 and everybody lost. Like, mine went to zero. Mine went less than zero, which isn't even possible for the value of the stock. Right? That's how badly I screwed up the company that I was running, David G. Inc. And then relieve me of the bondage of self. Relieve me from David, not the other David. I'm talking about me here, right? Please relieve me of how badly I have screwed up my life so that I can do what? Be of maximum service to you, God, and all the people about me. And yeah, take away my difficulties so that I am not handicapped from being able to go out and help other people through demonstration, bearing witness, right? To all those people I want to help, and I'm going to demonstrate to them your power, your love, and your way of life. And am I going to do this just as I'm formally taking the steps so that I get mine, so that I get clean and sober? No. I'm going to do this always. This is another time reference, another temporal reference. When does always begin and end? Pretty sure it's continuous.
Yeah, one thing that gets debunked by me reading this, and now that I made a decision to have a relationship with this power, reading up to this part of the book, you know, because a lot of times when I first came in, they said, well, if you don't believe in God, maybe you just believe in a group of drunks, you know, G-O-D. Well, a group of drunks, can I offer myself to them and to have them build with me and relieve me of the bondage of self? I don't think that group can do that. Because if I could do that, I would have done that in my own power. I'm pretty sure the group can't do that either. Because then can the group of drunks take away my difficulties and then show me the victory that I'll be able to bear witness of those that will help with their power and their love and their way of life? They can be great demonstrations in my life. But I have to have a relationship with a God of my own understanding. David read there in the very beginning. It says, many of us said to our maker, as we understood him. I like to say, as I don't understand him. But I just know that he is. That's it. He is. That's the only way I look at it. He is. And my experience is when I've done this, when I've earnestly got on my knees and humbled myself before my creator and did this third step prayer, and I humble myself, I've said this many times here for those simple reasons, because my God is not an egomaniac. But I humble myself to remind me that he is all powerful. He's infinite power and I am finite, that I need him to come into my life. And I invite him in all day long. I say this third step prayer every single day. I have never missed a third step prayer in all the 24 hours I've been sober. And I say a couple other prayers out of the book too, every single day. Not because I think I'm going to jinx this thing or something, just because I have had an experience of a demonstration in my life of successful life, because what David read in those promises above that today, I live those things. And David said throughout the whole book, there's promises. Where I see them, I've seen them come alive in my life. I have a new freedom. I've had new happinesses. All day long, I have new experiences with these things. My father-in-law lives with us because he's getting up in age and he needs a little help. New happiness is new freedom. As I sit down with my father-in-law who wants to share about the old days and sometimes can't remember, I bring God in because I might have an agenda of things that I got to do. But out of respect to my wife and to my father-in-law, I sit and listen to what he has to say. And as I stated a couple weeks ago prior to that, you know, when my grandson was little and he lost his mother and we lost my daughter, God tapped me on the shoulder that day. The next day after the passing of my daughter, because my grandson would come home from school and it would be the most difficult when he was 9 years old trying to explain to me what happened to school. Like, well, like Susie touched Bobby and then like Sally touched, like, you know, and I was like, oh my God, do you understand? I got all these stuff to do right now. And God tapped me on the shoulder. He really did, because I invited him in that morning and he said to me, I don't know what his voice sounded like, but I heard it loud and clear, that when your grandson comes home, you give him your divided attention. Be selfless. And I have done that every single time. And my grandson lives with us since he was 5. He's 19. He's going to college next year. I do that every single time because of the power of God in my life. And I do it because I love to do it. I love that God has made me an agent of his power, that I get to be in his life, a demonstration on how to treat my wife. These things, this selflessness is what is the solution, as Bill gives us many solutions in the big book, to my problem, my real problem, that I'm selfish and self-centered.
All right, let's continue in 63, third paragraph.
Oh, sorry, David. I did find some definitions.
Oh, yeah, please.
There's a lot of them, so I'm just going to name like a few of them because a lot of them could fit. But for offer, it could mean present or express readiness or the intention to do something. Provide or make an attempt at or show one's readiness.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashton.
We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once.
Okay. So I love how this starts out. You know, it gives me direction and it uses the word, we found it very desirable. Very desirable. We're reading the black and white to take this spiritual step, because it is, these all are spiritual steps, with an understanding person. Would that person possibly be a sponsor? I think so. That would be a great person to take this step with. That's who I do with my proteges. I do the third step prayer. We get on our knees. We say this prayer. Or you can do it with your wife. I've done this prayer with my wife. I've done this prayer many times with family members. Best friend, you know, I would do this with David, a spiritual advisor, anyone who's a step guide in my life. Absolutely. But it's better to meet God alone with than one who might misunderstand. I don't know if that's old language, because early on there weren't so many members. I'm not necessarily real clear on that. But there's plenty of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who understand the text and what the third step prayer and the meaning is for it. So I don't have any excuses. I should find someone that's armed with the facts about themselves in this text here. The wording was, of course, quite optional. So the third step prayer could be written in whatever I need it to be written as. I don't like to change the book for myself, so I stay true to the text. But quite optional, so long as we express the idea of being selfless and voicing it without reservation, with no hesitation at all. This is only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made an effect, the effect is changed. Sometimes a very great one was felt at once.
So let's look at some of the language here. We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step. So Bill's taking pains. And remember, where we are in the book is we just came out of that whole chapter, we agnostics, just a few pages ago, where we're really introducing, you know, to the new person, all these thoughts and concepts around spirituality and belief and getting into faith, and that, you know, we've really got a spiritual illness. It's our primary problem, and therefore we're going to need to seek a spiritual solution. So I feel like Bill is just educating us a little bit here, pointing out this is a spiritual step. But here's a little pop quiz. Beyond this step where Bill is saying, you know, this is a spiritual step, what are the other spiritual parts of the program? It's a trick question. It's all spiritual, right? This is the whole thing. You guys have heard me say this if you've been coming to this meeting. The entire point of 12-step recovery, the entire point is to take the steps to have a spiritual awakening. That's the whole point in step 12. And then do what? carry that message to other struggling people, alcoholics and addicts, right? Whatever the affliction may be. And we've got these traditions. We've got our program recovery. That is our message. And you know, 12 steps in that. And then we've got our traditions, 12 traditions. That's how we protect the message, right? And then we've got our 12 concepts. We've got 36 spiritual principles, and the concepts are in place to make sure that we perpetuate the message, all spirituality. So we're going to do this with an understanding person. This is our wife, best friend, spiritual advisor. And you know, David, I think, gave this, his interpretation is a little bit more latitude than I would. I would say, if you're working with me, you're taking this step in this prayer with me, period. I'm not super interested when newcomers have ideas about how they want to work the steps the first time through, right? I'm just not super interested because they don't have the experience. They don't have the discernment, the judgment about how to work this thing. Right? I mean, I don't know. Am I being a hard ass? Maybe, but you're coming to me for help because you got to quit playing God and you're trying to figure out how to do that. So maybe, you know, take some suggestions from someone who's been doing this, right? And is healthy. Right? So we're going to take this step together. We're going to say this prayer together. And the wording was, of course, quite optional. And David talked about this. And I've actually, when I get fundamental in my belief system, I'm like, wait a minute, this is a prayer. It's perfectly written. I love this prayer. You should say it just as is. That's my knee-jerk reaction. But I have heard some people write some incredibly beautiful versions of the third step prayer on their own. I heard when I was listening to the great speaker Herb Kay one time, and a woman in the Q&A part at the end of one of the sessions read hers, and I was absolutely blown away with how beautiful it was. And since then, I'm a big fan of this. You know, the wording not important as long as, you know, the motive and the means are on point. Okay? And also, so I got to express the idea, and I have to voice it without reservation. Okay, there's no fake it till I make it, making a decision here. Okay, I don't think that's the right message to myself or to somebody new. I need to be doing this without reservation. Am I actively turning my will and my life over to God right now? No. I'm going to do that by following through and continuing to take the steps. But I need to make the decision without reservation. Why do I have to make this decision without reservation? Because this is the decision that cements the hope and the belief that started in step two. If I'm not willing to make this decision, I didn't really understand two, and I didn't agree with step one. Because if I really understood step one, then I'm powerless and no human power is going to get me better. Then I better start to get some hope and some belief, some willingness to believe in two, that a power can save my tail. And so then in three, I better start to get aggressively moving towards that power. And if I'm not willing to do that, I can't tell you how many times I've sat in meetings or at treatment centers or work response, like, I just don't know about the God thing. I just don't know about step three. I'm like, man, this is not a step three problem. This is a step one problem. Because if I have no solution coming out of one, man, I better get my tail in gear in two and three. Otherwise, I'm screwed. And I got nowhere to go. Because if I can't be reliant on me or another human, and I'm unwilling to be reliant on a higher power, I don't know. I don't think there's door number three here.
So before you read this next paragraph, I just want to say my experience with this is, once I do this third step prayer with my guys, my gals, my theys, whoever I'm sitting on my, getting on my knees and doing this, I tell them, your life is never going to look the same ever again because you're not managing your life anymore. The alcohol and drug problem could be swiftly removed. The unmanageability can start to get better. But here's the thing I need to tell you. That's the good news. The bad news is you're blocked from that power. You're blocked. That's where the 4 through 9 comes in here. All I'm doing here is making a decision to have a relationship with this power here. Made a decision. That's all I'm doing. Haven't done any work this far. Blocked. I must move on. And David says this all the time when he talks. The fourth step is a celebration. I'm just preparing you for what our experience with this thing is, because I am going to start to get unblocked from self. I'm going to find out the truths about me, and where there is truth, there is God. And when I find out that, and I, in each step, the third step asks me a question that I made a decision to have this relationship of power. How do I get this power? I need to get unblocked. The step four answers it. The step four answers the question. I need to get rid of it. And five, talking to God and another human being. Each step is entwined with the next one. The first step asks the question. The next step answers the question. That's at least my experience with the book.
Ashton, can you get us the appropriate definition for reservation? Bottom of 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. Go ahead, Ash.
Okay, so I have a few here. So vigorous, meaning carried out forcefully and energetically. I also do have vital, which is life-sustaining, life-giving, necessary to the continuance of life. Through our decision was a life-sustaining, life-giving, necessary to the continuance of life and crucial step. And then I do also have strenuous, which means eagerly pressing or urgent. So it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by an eagerly pressing or urgent effort to face and to be rid of. And then I'm still working on reservation, finding one that fits.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ashton.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, Bill drops the jackhammer on us here, man, with a lot of effect, with a lot of heavy energy, right? What's the time frame between step three and four? None. It's next. Go now. Next. What does next mean? Next means now. Right now. Let's go. I'm going to do a third step with somebody tomorrow. We're going to have a fourth step in their hand before we leave. Just giving you a heads up. Vigorous course of action. The first step, of which is a personal house cleaning. This is the first step of real action, meaning step four. Of the personal house cleaning, meaning step four through nine. Turn the page, which many of us have never attempted. I've never done this. No I've way. Always lived in column one and two. I know exactly who I'm mad at and why I'm mad at them. Here's a definition of reservation from Howard in the chat. Then it says, though our decision was a vital, as Ashton told us there, life-giving, crucial step. The crucial step was turning our will and life over to the care of God. But it could have little or permanent effect unless at once means now again, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things, take action there, the things in ourselves we've been blocking us from that power. Our liquor was but a symptom. We know now that I can't break out in craving. The obsession has to be removed by a power greater than myself, and I fire myself from my management position in David G. Inc. So I know that. So we got to get down to causes and conditions. We're going to analyze my defects of character. That's what the outline kind of looks like for me. That's all I got on that.
Yeah. So next, and if you want to be argumentative, or if, you know, a new person we're taking their steps wants to be argumentative, you say, well, next could be next month, could be next year. Okay, fine. Whatever. That's not what's being connoted here. I say my prayer with my sponsor, and then the next thing I do in my recovery as I start writing some inventory. Next, with some urgency, right? Next, I launch out on a course of vigorous. I love the word vigorous because it's almost like an onomatopoeia, you know, word that sounds like what it is. Like vigorous to me feels like busy and intense, right? So a course of vigorous action, not vigorous procrastination until I'm ready. Again, this goes to like a newcomer. I don't care if you don't feel like you're ready. You don't know what is best for you early in recovery. You just don't. Just trust me. I am sure it is theoretically possible to move somebody too quickly through the steps. I'm sure. I've not experienced that, but I have a lot of experience with people who drag their feet. Everybody who drags their feet, and so I see you smirking, Ashton, right? So people who drag their feet get into trouble. Sometimes bad trouble, sometimes the ultimate trouble, death, right? Oftentimes relapse, you know, whether it's behavioral or you're drinking or drugging again, or all sorts of other things, right? Let's move swiftly. Let's not drag our feet. Let's not be full of fear. Let's do the work. Let's be in a vigorous course of action. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Bill's being generous. He should have just said none of us had ever attempted. I can't imagine. This sounds like the kind of thing that I would have attempted in some sort of self-help system course I would have taken. And it would have been totally, whatever the opposite of thorough is, right, sparse. And I would have been totally dishonest with everything I would have written down, right? Though our decision, so my third step decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understood him to that point, was a vital, life-saving, and crucial, critical, required step. It could have little permanent effect. Oh, my God. Guys, I'm trying to get permanently better for the rest of my life. We think we get so that's too many slogans in the rooms have gone sideways and twisted. You know, David was talking about this earlier. Things get sideways and are taken out of context. I want to get better for the rest of my life. I want to stop drinking and drugging for good. I want a new way of life that is going to keep me happy, healthy, and sane. I do not want to have to renew this every 24 hours. I don't want to have an existence where I'm fighting, not picking up a drink every day. What a horrible existence. No, I want to get permanently better starting now. So it's going to have little permanent effect unless at once. Here's another temporal time reference. When is it once? Now. At once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Blocking me from what? Blocking me from God? Blocking me from my spiritual awakening? Blocking me from getting a healthier head, heart, and gut? Our liquor was but a symptom. So in the first 54 pages of the book, right, the 10 pages of the doctor's opinion, in the first 53 pages, we're talking about the powerlessness of alcoholism, right, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, chiefly the physical and the mental. After that, starting on page 44, we're really getting into the main problems, lack of power. And really, my ultimate problem is my unmanageability, my spiritual sickness, which is self, right? Selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking, just self everything, right? But here, Bill is then smashing home this point. He's saying, don't you get it by this point? The drinking, the drugging, you know, the dangerous sex, the spending, the overeating, the whatever it was that I was powerless over. Man, that's just a symptom. What's my real problem? Spiritual sickness, unmanageability. So we had to get down to the causes and the conditions. What is making this happen? David, you want to double back?
Yeah, so a little bit on a couple of the words that I missed here. So for definition purposes, top of page 64, first full sentence. So though our decision was vital, and great definition by Aston, for me, I give it to you, life-giving, life-sustaining. But crucial is a Latin for at the crossroads. I'm at the crossroads here. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God. The care, not over God, over the care of God. Different meaning altogether when I put the word care in there, as it's listed. It could have little permanent effect unless at once, David reemphasized how important that is here. Everybody thumbed up on that one for sure. By a strenuous effort to know, to face, and be rid of the things in ourselves which are blocking us. So I will find out my truth. And again, where truth is, I will find God. That will be my fifth step. And 6, 7 is what I will be rid of these things. God will remove the things that he finds that are unacceptable in my life. And again, we found out that our liquor is but a symptom. So we know back on page 62, our troubles are our own making.
Yeah.
And as David pointed out, after page 44 of our book, we're not even talking about liquor in our bodies any longer. So alcohol is not the problem. David and I and a whole bunch of us here haven't had a drink or a drug in a lot of 24 hours. I don't have a drink drug problem. I have an alcoholism problem. And sometimes it's untreated, where the bedevilments come alive for me. So we get down to causes and conditions. Is that my fear? Is that the cause? And the condition, is it self-will or self-reliance? Self-reliance doesn't go far enough. I have to have God-reliance. And I'll find out as we read this text, the more I see stuff like self-reliance in the book, that how important and vital it is to have God-reliance. That's all I have.
So let me double back here too. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. So here, what, anybody else here, if you like me, good at making decisions? Like, I'm great at making decisions. Like, anybody ever make this decision, gonna start my diet tomorrow, right? Tonight I'm gonna have pizza and cake, but tomorrow I'm gonna start my diet. And then the next day, did I start my diet? Well, sometimes, but sometimes not, right? Or get up in the morning and say, I'm going to exercise today. I got an elliptical down in the basement. I'm going to have 45 minutes on the elliptical. I'm making the decision to do that. But until I get my tail on the elliptical and press the start button and start moving, that decision doesn't do me much good. So what's being said here? I've got to make a decision and then I have to act on it. But guys, this isn't just a decision for me. Remember, the decision was framed in a prayer to God, as I understand him to this point. So I'm saying, God, I'm giving myself to you so that you can do with me as you like. But how do I prove that decision out to God? How do I prove to him that I'm serious about this decision? How do I fulfill the commitment that I'm making to God? It's by continuing to do the work. This is such an important idea. And I said this earlier tonight. It's my relationship with God that gets me better. It's not just God. Because we've got stories in here, and we've seen it, I'm sure most, if not all of us, in our experience. People come to meetings, maybe do a little 1, 2, 3, start to get some of those external circumstances, get a little better, right? Back in the house, back in the bed, got the job back, a couple of bucks in the pocket. And all of a sudden I decide I don't want to fulfill this commitment to God because I feel like God's already given to me those things that I want, the things that I lost, those circumstances that drove me into the AA or another fellowship in the first place. But then what's going to happen? I'm going to reap what I sow. I must keep going. I must fulfill this commitment. Otherwise, it's just an empty prayer. I've got to be in action, action and more action. First part's going to be this house cleaning, but this house cleaning opens up, you know, the rest of the sort of get healthy steps, 5 through 9. They all come out of 4. And David said it, and I do say this all the time, and it drives me nuts. when I am in a meeting and a newer person is sharing about where they are and they're recovering, they're like, oh, I'm ready, my four step. And some people are like, oh, and they're snickering, or they give them worse crosstalk back and say, oh man, I know how scary that four step is, man. And I drank over mine. And you know, it's like, I want to throw those people out the window. This is not a fear step. This is a celebratory step, the four step. And we're going to really start to get into it next week, because it's going to show me who I've been and how I don't have to be that guy anymore. Right? No recovered, healthy person would say anything to frighten a newcomer about them writing a four step. We ought to put them on our shoulders and march them around the room when we hear they're doing a four step. They are actively working to save their lives when they're writing a thorough and honest four step. Anything else?
Yeah, one last thing I was going to say. So this is like, when I start thinking about it, if I could have done this on my own power, wouldn't I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, in a lot better shape than I was in? I was in horrible shape, spiritually, mentally, and physically. So I feel, right? And if I want to change my behavior, then I got to change the way I feel. And if you want to change your feelings, then you got to change the way you're thinking. That's like just basic psychology 101. But I don't have the power to do those things. I am stuck in self. And this is why I'm going to get down to the root causes of my condition, which is selfishness and self-centeredness, fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. Those are the things that I'm going to look at in my fourth step. And I have a four or five column inventory that we'll get into the next couple of weeks here. And it's going to be freeing, because by the time I get to five, I'm going to know God. I'm going to know myself a whole lot better, but I'm really going to thank God from the bottom of my heart. Kind of a spoiler alert here, because I know Him better.